I'm experienced now, professional. Jaw's been broke, been lost, knocked down a couple of times. Bad. Been chopping trees. I done something new for this fight. I done wrestled with an alligator. That's right. I have wrestled with an alligator. I done tussled with a whale. I done handcuffed lightning, throw thunder in jail. That's bad. Only last week, I murdered a rock, injured a stone, hospitalized a brick. I'm so mean, I make medicine sick.
Bad dude.
Bad. Fast. Last night, I cut the light off my bedroom, hit the switch, was in the bed before the room was dark.
Incredible.
Fast.
Incredible.
And you, George Fulman, all of you chumps are gonna bow when I whoop him. All of you. I know you got him. I know you got him picked, but the man's in trouble. I'm gonna show you how great I am.
I'm recording too.
Voice recorder on, says the app.
Now, before we get in the interview with Ben, when we record, we just record in our house, and we try to have everything quiet. We tell the wives to get out of the house or out of the room.
Just so the audience knows, yeah. You say wives. How many wives do you have?
Well, considering my wife isn't, the one that lives here doesn't listen to this.
Because my wife's not here, so I don't have to tell her to go. I tell her I'm leaving, which she loves, by the way. Hey, honey, I'm leaving for an hour and a half.
Actually, my wife's like, what's that, you're doing a podcast? So I'll just be in my room eating chips and watching YouTube or Netflix. See you later.
You know what? I'd almost be watching. Rather be watching. Maybe our listeners would rather watch YouTube and Netflix than listen to a podcast.
Yeah.
The conundrum we put you in.
Try to make sure everything's kind of quiet. And then all of a sudden, my hamster running. Maybe our hamster, whose name is Starlet.
Okay.
Thanks to my six-year-old who named it, almost six-year-old, that named
it. That's actually a great hamster name.
Well, you know, if you want somebody named, ask my daughter. She'll name. She's great with names.
I should have had her name our twins when we had the chance.
She almost named our other daughter ABBA. She has no idea about the Swedish singing group ABBA. If you change your mind, take a chance. I'm the first in line. Take a chance. Honey, I'm still free. Take a chance on me. If you need me, let me know. Gonna be around. If you got your anyways, back to the hamster. The hamster's running. And right now, if you hear it, just think, if a hamster can run at night, so can you. If you want,
let's pause for a second, see if we can hear it.
Just sounds like a cage rattling.
It sounds. I thought it was the rain pattern on the window. So, Ruben, as always, it's good to be here.
And it's great that you're here as well. Welcome.
Well, thank you for allowing me to come into your home and share this experience with you. And by the way, we are still going the distance.
We are going the distance, absolutely.
This is episode 8.
Episode 8, yeah. Again, I don't want to take away from this. I think it's actually kind of Rocky related because cancer is a theme throughout Rocky.
I wanted you to actually share that news absolutely with our listeners. I think it's fantastic news.
Well, the news I received on March 2nd, 2011, was that I had cancer.
That's terrible news.
It is terrible news. And I remember the day, I remember the weather, it was clear, we were out, my cell phone battery died, came home, our voicemail at home and on the cell phone was full by two different doctors. And I was like, oh, this isn't good. So I told my wife to come in. I just knew that something was off. I talked to my doctor, Dr. Smith, who we had as a family doctor for, I think, like 33 years. Yeah, anyways, he told us the news. First, I was misdiagnosed with osteosarcoma cancer. The prognosis, whatever. They said that I'd probably be amputated from the belly button down. So I had that rolling in my head for about a month. Sure. What that would do to, of course, my life, my marriage, and all that sort of stuff. Thankfully, I only had plasmacytoma cancer. Like, it's weird being relieved.
I'm not a doctor or a professional in any of this, but I would assume there's cancers that are, I guess, better.
Yeah, there are. So. Well, I had a friend that had Rusty, if you're listening, if I get wrong, just let me know. But he had
one of two things will happen. You got it right, so he doesn't let you know, or he doesn't listen, you got it wrong.
Yeah. But anyways, he had a cyst. He had a cyst in his arm, right. That was a tumor that got removed. He got chemo. He got diagnosed and treated all within a month.
Crazy.
For me, it was kind of like a year process. After 5 years, you're considered to be a survivor. You've survived cancer. So statistically, you have survived cancer. For the cancer that I had, plasmacytoma, most people die between years 2 and 5.
Right.
Not terrific news.
No.
I'm past year 5.
Yes.
I'm alive, cancer-free.
It would be a very weird podcast if you were not alive.
You know what? That'd be really great ratings.
True.
This just in. Podcaster is a ghost.
That's true.
That's something nobody would believe.
Nobody. I don't think anyone would believe this.
What are you doing, man? Like, this is no time to...
Like, there's a ghost right behind me, isn't there?
So you might as well just say that you're alive. Just to
keep... I am alive.
Okay.
Unless you see dead people, and you, listener, hear dead people.
I see dead people.
In your dreams? While you're awake? Dead people, like, in graves and coffins?
Walking around like regular people.
About a month ago, my doctor thought I had prostate cancer. Did not. And then once that was done, I got my routine test for plasmacytoma cancer. And so I had that waiting. When I went to bed last night, I'm like, okay, am I going to be told I have cancer today or not have cancer? You just have to fall asleep watching TV.
Right.
Because I think I'm just going to, just retire. I'm just going to lay in bed for a bit till I fall asleep and not have my mind go crazy.
Was there any good cancer movies on?
You know what's funny you say that? Okay, I was going to watch a cancer movie.
What was that Michael Keaton movie? The Michael Keaton one? What was that one again?
The Birdman? Oh, My Life?
My Life, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Tearjerker.
Yeah, it was tearjerker. But so I thought, I'm going to watch a comedy. And actually, my doctor prescribed for me to watch comedies once a week.
Sure.
So anyways, I'm going to watch a comedy. Netflix had a new Adam Sandler, David Spade movie.
The Do-Over.
And I really like David Spade.
He's actually good in this movie.
Yeah, I'm like... So you watched it?
I'm 3/4 way through. When I'm able to watch a movie or a show in my house, I watch on my phone before I fall asleep, or I'm lying in bed to fall asleep, but I don't want to fall asleep, but I'm so tired, I get about 20-minute increments per night.
Okay.
That's my watch. That's my viewing time.
All right.
So I'm 3/4 way through. It's taking me about 4 days.
Okay. For me, when I'm watching a movie, I'm there to escape.
Right.
I don't know really how far you are. For those that want to watch The Do-Over.
Fans out there of the Adam Sandler genre movies.
Mute it for about 5 seconds. Are you muted? Okay, cancer. Do you know this yet? The cancer in the movie?
Maybe not. I'm at the part right now where David Spade basically escapes the pool from the mad husband.
Oh, you're barely in it.
Okay. So I'm only halfway through then.
So long story short, I didn't finish the movie.
Too sensitive at that moment.
Because I'm waiting to see whether or not I have cancer.
Now the question is, can you finish the movie?
Now can I finish it?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I could.
Can you go the distance with Adam Sandler?
Do you know what? I got to be in the mood to watch a Sandler movie.
Oh, yes.
Sometimes you get the feeling that life is too short to watch a Sandler movie.
The irony is you're not dying, but it's too short to watch it.
Okay, now...
All right.
So let's shift back. So that's been on my brain, so...
So sorry, listeners, if we pulled you through Ruben's journey there of cancer, but...
I'm so sorry that I bored you with... What?
But this is good. You should know your host a little bit. Ruben is officially...
Cancer survivor. It was weird to share that on Facebook because that's the easiest way to disseminate the information to family and loved ones and to type it out. Try not to cry.
Well, sure, it's incredible news.
Took my kids to the petting zoo and I'm trying not to cry at the petting zoo.
Right.
And fortunately, the goats there made me sneeze about 50 times, and so it covered the tears.
Creed has this cancer storyline. We don't want to get there yet, but I'm sure when you watch Creed, it's probably on your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You're the closest family member other than my grandfather who's had cancer and my aunts.
Yeah.
So I've had it in my family, but I think family, like i.e. brother, parents, that's as close as you can get, spouse. So you're the closest family member that I've had with this and the youngest. that I can remember.
Yeah.
I guess my aunt probably had it in her 30s or 40s. I can't remember the whole story. But that being said, I think everyone's been touched.
Everybody has been.
It's just that, I don't know if disease is the right word, that condition, that just seems to touch a myriad. And I don't think there's very many people where you could say, hey, do you know of anyone personally that has died of cancer?
Yeah. Yeah. I had somebody tell me that they don't know anybody that has been had cancer, but they said it to me.
Yeah. They just broke their streak.
I'm like,
don't have a conversation with Ruben.
Cancer-free, it's better than winning the lottery.
Great. I hope you're in the mood to listen to an interview.
I am. Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
So before we get into the interview, I'm just going to read you a little bit of a bio on Ben.
Okay, go for it.
Ben is a screenwriter, filmmaker, and sometime actor with a few independent credits and awards under his belt. He's the co-creator of a TV sitcom, The Mamalouk, about a bumbling mob wannabe played by Johnny Roastbeef Williams of the Goodfellas fame. He's also a retired New York City police officer and served during 9/11 at the site. So we get into the script called The Third Round. And The Third Round comes from Ben's lifelong love affair with boxing. Years ago, he followed the career of heavyweight Guy "The Rock" Cassell, who was from New Jersey and fought in the 1977 New York Golden Gloves. Then he turned pro. This is Guy. In 1978, he had a much-hyped main event against a street-brawling ex-con named Bobby Helpern. As Helpern was touted to win and perhaps get a title shot against the champion Leon Spinks at the time, Guy KO'd him in the third round of a thrilling fight at Madison Square Garden. Ben was fascinated by the whole thing, and years went by, and he often thought of Guy Cassell and wondered what had become of him. Finally, Ben found Guy on Facebook, like we find a lot of people, I guess, and Ben wanted to write a screenplay about it all. So he reached out to Guy. Guy Cassell responded to Ben in a positive way, and they got together and put together a few drafts for a screenplay. They eventually got to a draft that they liked and have been shopping it to agents and producers since then. It's a tough sell, but it's a great Rocky-type story. Guy Cassell now lives in Naples, Florida, and he's doing pretty good. And there you go, guys. So that's kind of the intro to who Ben Fiore is, what he's working on, and who he's working with, and why. Hope you enjoy.
Well, I'm glad that you got the interview for Ben. He sounds like an interesting guy. That's a very cool intro. I really look forward to checking out his interview. It's great to talk to you about Rocky.
Thank you. It's great to talk to you about Rocky,
but, too. You know, variety is a spice of life, and I want to hear what you and Ben talked about, and I want to hear his story, and clearly he's had a life full of variety, depth, breadth, and all of that, and I'm curious to hear what he has to say.
All right, without further ado,
our first guest. So hey, thanks, Ben. Appreciate you doing that.
Please stay on the line while your call is completed. Long distance charges may apply.
Hey Ryan, how you doing, bud?
Good, Ben. How are you?
All right, good to hear from you.
Oh, good to hear from you. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate the leap of faith on your part.
Of course, I appreciate your interest. It sounds like a fun venture.
It's like we look at it almost like a book club. We've got 10 friends that want to come over and talk about their book of the month, but we're just doing it out of Rocky online.
Right. Of course, help you put it together, get the word out there to try to get people.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. Definitely reaching out to other Rocky fans. We've got a couple of interviews lined up with people that have much more followers or contacts, right, that even just have actually worked with Stallone, who, you know, the second, third, fourth, fifth fiddle people who've touched the industry that I've never been a part of it at all. Just a fan of films and a huger fan of Rocky. I hashtagged Rocky, came across your guys' stuff. That's how I found you guys. I'm like, whoa, there's a guy who's actually writing a script, a boxing script, and that would be you.
Yeah, actually, my background, I'm retired from the NYPD, and
thank you for your service, by the way.
Thanks for saying that. You know, I had always had an interest in the cinema from when I was, a teenager. We used to use the whole Super 8 camera, film like little parodies and stuff. So
yeah,
I always kind of had that. I kind of put it on the back burner then, and then I became, you know, a New York cop, and I still always had that. And towards the end of my career on the NYPD, I started studying screenwriting and stuff to try to get a foot in the door somewhere. It's a very, very, very hard business.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine. Somebody like Stallone was also an inspiration. And I'm also a lifelong boxing fan. So between being a fan of boxing and then, you know, I'm sure you guys are Rocky fans. You read about how he kind of down on his luck when he wrote that.
Absolutely. And oh, yeah.
He, like, wrote it in, like, 2 days, the script, after he saw, well, Chuck Webner had almost lasted 15 rounds with Muhammad Ali at the time.
Right.
Back in, I think that was in, like, 75 that happened. He was so inspired by that he sat there with pens and he wrote the rough draft of the script, that he was so down on his luck. He had to sell his belong to be able to eat.
Yeah.
And it was like a real great success story, you know, and then they wanted to give that, as you know, they wanted that script. They wanted like either Burt Reynolds or Ryan O'Neal or one of these
right.
known actors to
right.
write the star in it. And he kept saying no, and he kept turning them down. And then finally they loved the script so much that, you know, that they went for it. I mean, when I hear that, I get chills when he tells the story.
About
how he had gone for a part to audition that he didn't get.
Right.
And he struck up a conversation with the producers, as you know, I write too, and I got this script, blah, blah, blah. And they said, oh, yeah, bring it around. We'll take a look at it. And he said once, it was in one of those behind-the-scenes things on the DVD, he said, if I had never struck up that conversation, I might not be sitting here. And that gave me a chill when I heard that.
Oh, yeah. You know? It's an inspiration to really anyone can, you know, chase your dreams, or just don't be afraid. No, don't let the first no be the first answer or the only answer, I should say.
Oh, and believe me, let me tell you, I've been told no thousands of times. It still goes on. Like we're pushing the, we have a sitcom, the Mama Luke. It's about, a guy that wants people to think he's in the mob, but he's really like a schlep for the real wise guys at the social club. And
right.
Played by Johnny Rosebeef Williams, who was in Goodfellas and a few other films. And my, you know, my partner in California, he's production partner, Mark Riccardi, he's a stunt coordinator for a lot of major films and TV shows. He got into the production side of things. And when we had been working together on something else and I came up with that idea, he just loved it.
Oh,
and
good.
And it's a few years already we've been trying. We have had an investor come on board to shoot the pilot. We've got a couple of other episodes. And yeah, we're still pitching it to different networks and stuff, and you know, a few little things, little strides happening, but very, very, very hard. It was turned down by all major
right.
networks, even like Netflix, Comedy Central, and the ones that are nice enough to get back to you. Not many that even get back to you. I mean, give you the time of day, but the
right.
ones that did get back to us said that, you know, they said it's very good what you got here. It's original, but today it's more of a market for unscripted reality shows that appeal to a younger audience.
Oh, really?
And so they're doing less and less scripted things. So I'm hoping that turns around again, you know, the other way. So I was never that crazy about reality shows. No, I don't watch them anymore, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's not really an art form so much as a, I don't know how to describe it.
Right.
I guess it's a social competition more than...
Yeah, it is.
So I guess it has its audience, of course. It's all about advertising and people go where the money is. It's tough. It can be very...
Exactly.
Very
it's all money. What's hot now? Now it's... reality shows, and eventually the title turned to something else. So we just keep bugging away. A little bit about Guy Cassell. Back, and like I said, I was a lifelong boxing fan. I have an older brother who was also into it. We did a little boxing and this and that. And I was always fascinated by like Muhammad Ali and all the greats, especially in the 70s. I had Frazier, George Foreman. I mean, that's when, to me, boxing was in its heyday back then.
Oh, yeah, I'd have to agree there.
We used to go to a lot of either professional or amateur, you know, boxing events and stuff. And I remember going to like the Golden Glove or something. We saw this guy, you know, the guy Cassell was from New Jersey. And he fought in the Golden Glove and a few other things. And they were comparing them to like Rocky Marciano, a small, heavyweight, like 5'10", like 215 pounds, you know, rough and tough guy that, you know, resembled Marciano a lot. And they used to call him Rocky. It was almost like a Rocky story his whole life. They called the guy Rocky Cassell. You know, so I had seen him fight, and then all of a sudden he went into the professional ranks, and then all of a sudden never heard of him again. And I was always wondering, you know, wonder what became of him, because, you know, he just kind of fascinated me.
I watched that clip you sent. That's the first I've ever, I have to admit, that's the first I've ever heard of him. And I watched the clip that you sent me on YouTube, his interview, and you could tell right away that he was a very charismatic, I wouldn't say
right.
cocky, but cocky, and they think you have to be a boxer. Very confident,
right?
And very charismatic. Had quite a personality to him, so his story must be very interesting.
It is, and you know, he's an educated guy too, and he actually has a law degree. He became what happened was, and I never had heard of him anymore. And over the years, I would think about him because it was a big fight that he had in May of 1978. This guy named Bobby Halpern was a real real rough and tough guy. He was an ex-convict. You know, he was like a gang, street gang member from the Bronx. And
wow.
he was real bad news, this guy. He had done time in jail. And he was also a heavyweight boxer. He was looking to make a comeback when he had gotten out of jail. And they were touting him that maybe he would have a title shot at Leon Spinks, who at the time had beat Ali on a close decision and was a champ at that time. So to make a long story short, one of the New York Post sports writers was now since passed away. Jack Newfield was a very good writer. He used to write for the New York Post, and he had a thing for boxing, too. He was a big boxing fan. He had suggested that they have some kind of match for Bobby Helfand, because when he got out of jail, Sports Illustrated had run a 9-page feature on him called The Comeback from Nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about him, you know, being, you know, having been sent up to jail and training in jail for years, and finally coming out, trying to straighten his life out and getting back into boxing. So they wound up matching him up with Guy Cassell, who was this, you know, young, kind of like total opposite of him, educated young guy trying to come up, you know, the ranks. And so they had the match, and they expected that Bobby Helfand would win. And
right.
They were bumped up to a main event because at the time, Jerry Cooney was coming up the ranks and had supposed to be the main event. He had been injured in training. So they put them from co-feature, they went up to main event that night. And I remember that there was a pretty rough fight. And then in the third round, Guy, you know, Bobby had come after Guy on the ropes, and Guy had thrown a right hand that just connected. And he just knocked Bobby out cold. So he was out for like 2 or 3 minutes. They had a very doctor into the ring. It was very thrilling. I never could shake the image of that. I just was so fascinated by it.
Oh,
like
yeah.
I said, then not too long after that, Guy hung around for a while, and then he just disappeared. I had wanted, and, you know, fast forward all those years later, and I was writing. I remember telling my wife about it. So I'd love to write about that. So I'd love to see if I could locate Guy and see, you know, whatever became of him. And sure enough, Facebook. I go on Facebook. I punch in Guy Cassell, and sure enough, it comes up. There he is, looking great. The pictures of him, the studio. So I was a little nervous about it. So I told my wife, I said, look, what do you think if I write to him and tell him who I am? So you think he might think I'm some kind of nut looking for money or something like that? So she said, you know, look, there's only one way to do it. You try. The worst is either he ignores you, or he says no, or maybe you're not going to know unless you try. I'm nervous thinking the guy might think I'm after money or something like that.
Sure.
So you know what? I write a whole detailed letter telling who I am, all the stuff, you know, I told you about in the past, or being a fan. All of a sudden, they wait about a day or two later. He responds with a really nice letter that he'd be thrilled, honored, that I would want to do that. He'd definitely love to work with me. And then
wow.
We spoke over the phone, and one thing led to another. We met a few times, and we would talk all over the phone all the time, and taking notes down and everything. And you know, we came up with a draft. You know, it was called the third round. And it's, you know, it's based on, you know, I based the title on in the third round when he knocked Bobby Helfand out.
Right.
Because it was kind of a symbolic thing. As he would tell you, his father was actually known as a neighborhood gangster. He's a very brutal guy.
Oh, wow.
And a guy like kind of lived under that dark cloud, that dark, you know, that his father cast. Because everywhere he go, they say, you know, people be whispering, there's the gangster's son, there's blah, blah, blah. And he always hated that. He wanted to get out of that shadow. And boxing kind of presented itself as a way for him to try to get out of that. So it was interesting. I mean, he had so much stuff that it was just too much to even fit into the script, the stories of behind-the-scenes stuff that went on. And getting back to the Rocky thing, you know, he was very inspired also by that. By the whole Rocky thing. So it was like a Rocky story in itself, the real life.
So what year was that fight against? 77, he had that third round fight?
It's 78. It was May of 78, May 15, 1978.
Okay, so yeah, the Rocky phenomenon was just really picking up and building. I guess part two was coming out around then as well. So
Right. Rocky had been, because I think it came out in 76, the original Rocky was released. So it was in the, you know, the public consciousness and everything. It was, you know, it was very, very popular.
Right.
Now, and especially him resembling Rocky Marciano, the whole Rocky thing, and you know, him almost being like a Rocky type himself. So the whole thing kind of went hand in hand. You know,
yeah, he has like movie star looks to him, really. He's a very handsome fellow back then. I mean, I'm sure he is now.
Yes.
Still. I haven't seen him, but...
He stays in good shape, I'll tell you. He lives in Florida. The funny thing that he just texted me today to see how things were going, because we haven't spoken in a little while.
Right.
So I told him that maybe this coming week we'll talk. He lives in Naples, Florida now. Him and his wife had moved down there. He loves it. He loves it that he moved from Jersey down there because he got sick and tired of the cold winters up here and,
sure.
and all of that. And I so can... he's doing well down there.
Good.
He's in shape, though. He looks good.
I would love to talk to him as well. We could do that together, and you could questions with you. But I would love to hear.
Absolutely.
I would love to hear boxing stories. I'm sure our small but loyal audience would love to hear boxing stories. Of course, real life boxers, some of the inside stuff, some of the not so pretty behind the scenes
yeah.
stories are always good. I'm sure there's a few of them back then.
Yes, absolutely.
And
he had some great stuff that. He will go on and on, and I can listen for hours to that stuff. It's fascinating, you know, because he saw some of the bad side of it, you know, with
mob
influence and all the cheating that goes on and all of the nonsense and everything. You know, you can probably imagine, you know.
That aspect, I find, it sounds terrible, but that's the kind of stuff you want to hear. You kind of want to hear about that underbelly that maybe still happens. I don't know, but that's very intriguing. To kind of hear about, because you see it in the movies, you know, you sometimes see it in the movies, fictitious movies about people dropping for a fight or, you know, and I guess that stuff really happens. So it'd be kind of interesting to hear how that plays out, how that discussion is given and what does the athlete do to sell it? That would be an interesting, definitely an interesting insight.
Oh, absolutely. Especially the mob influence, because I don't think it's as much today, but
no,
I think back like the 40s, 50s, 60s, like that, the mob, anywhere with this big money, you know, they're going to be involved. And there was a lot of that going on. A certain guy that would take a dive for a better fit to fix a betting, you know, situation or that kind of thing that going on. Even back in Guy's day, there was some of that stuff going on.
Oh, I believe it.
In the 70s.
I believe it. I hope it's okay. I've actually been recording this call to make sure.
That's okay.
To test my software because I just installed it on my cell phone. It's just an app that records. And two, I figured you'd probably just start talking about things and saves you having to do it again because you've already talked some detail about your meeting with Guy and your love for boxing. Since I've already got you on the horn, do you mind just tell me a little bit about your background in law enforcement? How long were you with the police?
Oh, yeah. Well, for 20 years, I became, and we used to have, actually, New York used to have three police departments. It had the NYPD, then the New York City Transit Police, which policed the subways, and the New York City Housing Police, which was in, like, the housing projects.
Right.
And it was a goal of so many mayors that they came along to merge all the departments together. So I actually started at the New York City Transit Police down in the subways.
Okay.
And I was a police officer down there. And then finally... Mayor Giuliani finally accomplished it by merging all three departments together into one that's just the NYPD. They figured it would be easier for one department because it eliminated all kinds of redundant things and doing things twice, like paperwork and stuff like that. So they figured just it's easier for one department. I liked it better when it was just a transit police, but kind of more of a specialized department that just dealt with the subways. But that came to pass. I did a total of 20 years. I was the whole 9/11 thing I worked through and all that, and then I finally retired in 2003, so I did a total of 20 years from 1983 to 2003.
Oh, wow.
And then the screenwriting stuff, like I said, I always had a love for the cinema, going all the way back to Boyhood and everything. So I figured, that I always loved to write, so the best way to get into it was to learn screenwriting, which is a whole art unto itself. You know, there's a whole formatting that you have to follow, and screenplay is different, where a novel tells it, a screenplay has to show it in through words. So I enjoyed it very much. I've been involved in independent film. I've written and shot a few short independent films myself.
I IMDb'd you on to see your name. I saw that you have some credits to your name on there. So what were those ones again, the short films you did?
Well, I did a few. Actually, I started working with an independent filmmaker in New York City and wrote a few for him. And then I did a few on my own. I had written and directed a few short films. Short films are more like a calling card.
Right.
For the filmmaker, they're not marketable. You won't make any money on a short film. But what they do is they teach you the nuts and bolts of filmmaking. you learn. I enjoy the whole process, from the writing to shooting it to editing it, scoring it, the whole thing. And then you put them in film festivals, and then you you kind of make a name for yourself that way.
Okay.
You know, you get like local notoriety, and sometimes there are contests and prizes involved, or if you're lucky, you may get distribution on a DVD or that sort of thing. So shorts get your name out there, and they get you some kind of notoriety. Most of the time local, but if you're lucky, you may get into a festival that's got a big reputation, that, you know, especially if you win an award, or you get a lot of exposure like that.
That's awesome. I mean, yeah. Just the fact that you're just doing something that I assume you love doing it.
Oh, absolutely.
Again, like this little podcast that my brother and I are doing, I mean, I don't have any grand illusions. I have no idea if it's even going to reach 1,000 people at any given time. When it comes down to it, it's just fun to do. You know, people like to fish. Some people like to carve wooden objects. We as humans almost need that. Do something other than just our daily grind of work. And,
oh, without a doubt.
I like to come home sometimes. I'm busy with my family, mind you. But outside of that, I'm like, what about me? What do I like to do? And I like to talk. I like Rocky. And I like podcasts. So I thought I'd just combine the three together. And so I have a question about the script. Is it completed at this point?
Yes, we have. Actually, we have a few drafts. With those things, you change a lot of things. You get another idea. But the last draft that we had written, we liked a lot. Sent it out. One major screenplay contest that came in as a semifinalist.
Oh,
and
great.
I've had it looked at by a few people. Nobody, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just that a lot of times people thought, oh, they did so many boxing movies. Yeah, but it's more than a boxing movie. Boxing, I consider it like the backdrop of
exactly.
It, really. And then mostly it's about a guy wants to shake that dark cloud that was cast by his gangster father and make a name for himself. And we added a little dramatic license to it, came up with a few things that to make it a little more interesting, because mostly people's lives, especially a lot of these biographical pictures that you see in movies that you see, they really trump it up, because most of our lives are very mundane. You followed me around all day with a camera, it'd be a very boring movie, you know?
Right.
But if you have me fighting off terrorists, bombs going off and shit, you know, then, of course, I mean, I'm just getting a little bit dramatic. You have to put that, you either call it artistic license or dramatic license. Like I said, we agreed on a draft that we liked.
What is the coverage of his life from when to when in this screenplay?
Starts out him as a young boy. And it shows the influence of his father and what his father was really all about. So, long-suffering mother, and she was very doting over him and very protective. The father was very brutal, you know, and he was a violent guy. And he was known as the neighborhood gangster. So the guy went through his life with that, like, you know, every time, like I was explaining earlier, even people would look at him and say, oh, there's the gangster son. You know, he was noted as that, and that bothered him a lot growing up.
Right.
You know, and then he eventually discovered boxing through a friend, like a third party, a friend of a friend. He was turning on to boxing, and he kind of saw that as a way maybe to escape that shadow that was cast by his father. And then on the other hand, we show Bobby Halpern, how with him, life a crime, and finally was sent up for a number of years for him and another guy had grabbed some guy and kidnapped the guy and, you know, beat the guy up and robbed him. And he finally was sent up for about 17 years for that.
Wow.
And he trained all the time while he was in jail. And then he finally got out. Almost like showing both of them and the path they took, how different their lives were. And
right.
Then finally, they cross paths when this matchup is made.
Okay.
And that guy, you know, he was telling me, like, well, real things that happened. You know, they had the press conference and how that goes. And Bobby Halpern making remarks. And, oh, anybody named Guy, I got to knock them out. Make those kind of remarks and the things
right.
That went on with that when the match was finally made, and how a lot of people didn't give him a chance and they thought that someone was going to just walk all over him. He said how, you know, he was nervous before the fight, and then all of a sudden he realized, he said, when Bobby's heart is shot and he was still standing, and he said, you know what, I'm going to take this guy out. And he did, and we added, like I said, we added certain things,
sure.
You know, for purposes of dramatic license as well, to make it more, you know,
right.
More interesting,
right.
As far as, you know, stand as a movie.
Well, that happens in all movies. You know, they're telling a true story or a true event that happens, but to propel the story and keep the audience engaged, you have to add stuff,
right.
Or else people just go home and look in the mirror if they want real life all the time, so to speak.
Oh, yeah. Because, like I said, most lives are very boring and mundane, everyday
sure.
life. But I think it's very dramatic. I'd love to see it done. You know,
oh,
I
yeah.
Don't rule out another draft of it. Sometimes you have to add certain things, take certain things out. We've been shopping it around. We even have a Facebook fan page. Find like screenplay contests that are legitimate, that are not just looking for your money, that have some kind of significance to them if you place or win in there. So I try to send it out there, and I send queries out to agents and production companies. Very, very, very hard sell.
Well, it sounds like you're doing everything you possibly can. I mean, you're probably a combination of, and I'm sure you know this, product and luck combined. I mean,
exactly.
I'm sure Stallone could say the same thing with his script. It was a bit of luck, hard work, and just, it could have been two different other producers who could have told him, get out of our office and never come back, and we would never have this story today.
Oh, yeah, right. They might have said, that sounds ridiculous, so it's too far fetched. But, somebody gave him a chance. I guess the stars were aligned right to him that day. Sometimes it's the time, and it's just what they're looking for, and if you meet the right people. And it's almost like a Rocky thing with me, too. I just keep picking myself up off, to dusting myself off and getting back in the fight, because I'm way past the point of no return. I can't stop doing what I'm doing now. I have to keep going forward and hoping that that something happens. I keep trying. Every avenue I can go down, I try to have different irons in the fire with this stuff and just keep going. It almost relates. It's sort of a Rocky type of way of thinking. You just can't stop. You got to go the distance. You got to keep staying in there. Pick yourself up off the canvas, dust yourself off, and get back in that fight.
I love it. That's true. And that's definitely the Rocky spirit, and the one that has touched all of us throughout our life, whether it's writing screenplays or just taking care of our family, going to work, keep moving forward. Just keep moving forward.
Absolutely. Like I said, getting back to the movie, I'm a huge fan of it as well. I remember back in 76, just before it came out, I went to the movies to see a Led Zeppelin movie.
Oh, great.
I think it was The Song Remains the Same.
Yeah.
So it came out. So I'm a big rock fan, of course. So we were watching, and all of a sudden, the trailer came up for Rocky. And I remember just stopping in my tracks, and I said to myself, man, that looks good. Being a boxing fan,
right,
and seeing that trailer for the first time, I guess I was in 76. I guess I was 17 years old, and we're in the movie. A couple of friends.
I envy you to kind of be that teenager to see that trailer for the first time and just be like, "Whoa, what is this? This seems incredible."
I can tell you that's what I remember a lot about it when talking about Rocky. Like I said, we're sitting in the movies with Led Zeppelin. When they show so many trailers before a movie.
Right.
These days now, they show you get a half hour of them. Back then, you get a couple of trailers, and you see a feature film. That came on all of a sudden, and I had never heard anything about it. And all of a sudden, the trailer came on for Rocky, and how life was a million to one shot, and blah, blah, blah. And the whole thing went on, and I said, geez, man, this looks good. And then, of course, after that, started hearing more about it. Eventually, the rest was history.
That's awesome.
But I distinctly remember that scene. It was a Led Zeppelin movie. I'm pretty sure it was The Song Remains the Same. So before we got to enjoy that, and this comes on, and I said, wow, I got to see this one. It's like one of those trailers that you really pay attention. Most of the time, it's a lot of junk.
Right. It's a sad state of affairs. Talk about, they say they've done too many boxing movies, but I find it funny when they release 40 superhero movies a year.
Right, yeah.
I definitely think there's room. There's definitely room for a boxing film. I mean, look at the success of Creed just recently. I mean, Southpaw came out.
What did you think? I thought Creed was good, but not great. I mean, I thought, I'm not saying it wasn't good. I thought it was good, but I didn't really think it was great. I guess because after a while, I mean, as great and as ingenious as the whole Rocky concept was, with each one, it starts to, I think it starts to wear... He's wearing it thin, starting to.
Well, I think that is
really
his last one.
Concept.
That's his last one. He's not doing another one with. If they continue to do the Creed storyline, he's done.
Yeah, I think that's because, again, if you really peel away at everything with that, it's pretty much the same story.
Sure.
And I'm not knocking that. Don't get me wrong.
No,
he's a genius as far as I'm concerned. What he accomplished in his life to become. From a nobody to a big movie mogul, having created one of the most enduring characters in cinematic history, really, when you come down to it.
Agreed.
And so I give him all the credit in the world there. I really do. I honestly mean that. I always admired him. He's one of my favorites. And again, I don't blame him also for milking that, because if you're making millions, let's do it again. Let's do it again. Why not? That's the whole name of the game.
It's supply and demand. It's a bit of supply and demand.
But I think that if you... Absolutely, but if you really peel away at every one, it's the same. It's really the same story. You're just putting different, different characters, different. They're throwing a few different backstories in and stuff like that. But like I said, beneath the surface, it's the same concept again. So right. I think at this point, like especially after Creed, and like I said, I didn't think it was bad by any means. I thought it was.
Oh, it could have been so much worse. Like, I was nervous when they announced it. I thought, oh boy. I'm a lifelong right. Stallone fan. Even I was very wary and very like, oh geez, maybe this is too much. Maybe Mr. Stallone, you've gone too far. And I think the highest point for me of that movie, and I think you'll probably agree, is every time Stallone was on the screen was the highlight of the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I think his portrayal of an aging Rocky Balboa, a sick Rocky Balboa, and this is as far as you can take the character. I think this is why it's his last one, because we see kind of the end of his, almost the end of his mortal life, really. That, you know, he has nobody left. He's sick. He has cancer.
I was kind of shocked when they put that in. I didn't know about that part. And I was, you know, it makes you feel bad, of course, and you see that, and he's kind of sick, and then he's trying to get him. Then the young kid kind of kept him alive with the way
right.
He was excited for him and everything.
Yeah, by all means, not a perfect
He was nominated
movie,
for Academy Award, right?
Yeah, he was nominated, and he got the Golden Globe for the performance, but not the Oscar.
Right.
I think the Foreign Film Press.
I mean, just a nomination to me, I mean, that's a great, great.
Yeah, to be nominated for a character that you created 40 years later, who could ever say they've done that? I mean, I'll never be able to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So, you know, it was a winner all through. You know, but I just think that, again, it wasn't a great movie, but I thought it was good. I do think that now it's time to maybe.
Well, he's actually. I think he's retiring Rocky. In fact, speaking of Mafia, and that's kind of your angles too there. I think he's looking at the film role of Scarpa.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with the gangster Scarpa, but I guess he was a mafia figure some time ago. Not too long ago. But
yeah, I mean, I've heard of him, but I don't know too much about him either.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see him play kind of a baddie, and I think he'd
yeah,
do well.
Yeah,
so he's been circling that project.
One movie that I liked him in that goes back to about 78, it was just after Rocky, and he was on a big role in popularity, was Paradise Alley. You remember
right.
That one.
Yeah, I haven't
actually,
seen it forever.
I actually liked that. I thought it didn't do so great at the box office, but I'd seen it a few times.
I think he wrote that one, didn't he? He wrote that one, too,
I think he did. He might have directed that as well.
I think so.
I have a feeling that, yeah, he did. I think he did write that, too. But I thought now, here's a little interesting side note. I mean, Armand Assante was in there. He was one of the brothers. But the other brother, the real big guy, his name was Lee Canalino. And he was an undefeated heavyweight boxer.
Okay.
And he had retired after a while. But he was like 6'5", like, you know, 250 pounds. Big guy. The guy that played the brother that was a little slow.
Okay.
Do you remember
okay.
that?
Yeah.
Lee Canalino was an actual professional boxer.
Okay.
Yeah, but Google him.
Okay, I will.
He had about 15 or more pro fights, and I believe he was undefeated. If for some reason, he got out of boxing. I don't know what it was. He was actually an actual boxer, so that was an interesting side note to that.
Oh, good.
A lot of Stallone films, that one stands out to me as well.
That's
and even there, it almost was a, if you look at that one, too, it was almost a Rocky-ish type of thing when they put the brother up for that to be the wrestler
right
and stuff like that, so he that whole concept kind of, you know, it did well for him.
He's the king underdog.
That appeals to everybody all over, you know what I mean, that underdog thing, the underdog coming, you know. And in Rocky, and a lot of people, here's another thing about Rocky that I find interesting. When I talk to a lot of people say, oh, that's a great sports film. It's a great boxing film. To me, it's really not a boxing film per se.
No.
Because I would say it's more, it's a guy that, again, an underdog that triumphs. He wins, not only does he prove to himself that he can go the distance, but he wins the girl. He wins her love.
Yeah.
He transforms her from this introverted woman that probably never had a chance at any kind of happiness or life like that. And he won her love, and he proved that he can go the distance. He proved that he could do it. He was given the opportunity of 100 lifetimes. And, you know, there's so much more to it than
that. Oh, yes.
I hear people
absolutely.
Saying, oh, it was a good box or a good sports movie.
It's got drama, but it's actually a love story.
Absolutely. It's a love story and a drama. A man triumphs like that. In other words, he was also, look at this guy. He's just like a guy that goes around and works for the mob guy. He's an arm breaker for him.
Right.
And then, you know, so you can't get any lower than that, really, when you come down to it. Now, I also heard that the original draft of the Rocky script, when he first wrote it, Rocky was a much darker character.
Yeah, you're actually right. We haven't touched on that, but we're actually going to bring that up in one of our podcasts. I actually have the original not the original script, but the original print off of the original script that he introduced.
I was about to say that too. I had that as well.
Yeah.
Because learning screenwriting, they always encouraged us in any classes I had taken. They said, read produced screenplays, like read copies of classic movies and produce screenplays to get an idea of how. And I also had read that somewhere that you see he was a much darker character because, again, it goes through so many drafts and so many changes. And, the director may say, I want to see this a little bit different and blah, blah, blah. He
was kind of a godfather, kind of like a godfather-esque type Rocky story. The scene that was in the script that obviously didn't make the movie was, you remember that Gozzo's bodyguard driver? And he's the one that keeps saying, hey, take her to the zoo.
Yeah, he didn't like them. Yeah.
Yeah. But Rocky, in one of the scenes, in the script, he gets tired of this guy ragging on him, and I think he pushed him too far about Adrian. And he grabbed the back of the guy's head and smashed his head into the steering wheel multiple times.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was in the movie.
No, it's not. It was in the original script.
That guy was nasty about it. I didn't like him.
Yeah.
Did he say, did you get the license plate of the truck that ran over
Yeah,
your face?
That's right, that guy.
Remember that? He was a nasty bastard.
So in the script...
take it to the zoo.
Yeah, I know. Which is funny that he says that because, take her to the zoo. Because in Rocky II, he proposes to her at the zoo. I want to ask Stallone, if I ever get a chance to ask him, I said, did you do that on purpose? Did you take Adrian to the zoo? Like, you wrote that in, obviously, because you wrote all the scripts. Like, was that kind of a wink-wink to that guy's insult, like, take her to the zoo? And that's where he proposed to her.
You remember, that was when you hear the behind-the-scenes things of it. Because I as a gift, at one point, I had gotten, an anniversary edition of Rocky. I love behind the scenes stuff when they talk to them.
Yeah.
And he told the story. You remember the skating rink story when he takes her to the place? I think it's like Thanksgiving night, and the guy's in there, and he gives the guy a couple of dollars to let them go on there.
That's
He had said that he said there was some kind of mix-up where they were supposed to have it was supposed to be like a regular night where it was open, and there was supposed to be a bunch of extras on skates like that in the movie. And so there's something happened. I forget how. Exactly what
I believe
we actually
talk about that in our third episode.
Oh, you do?
Okay. Yeah.
Because they said that they weren't available and the place was just all they had was that. And so but when you really think about it, it was brilliant the way it was because
Absolutely.
It was just him and her, and as if he wanted to take her out and do something. He really never done that before. So it didn't matter to him that nobody was there.
Yeah, it's a fortunate mistake or a fortunate. They thought it was bad news because it wasn't what they planned, but it turned out to be one of the
But actually it turned out because when you think about it, I love that stuff because when you think about the way they would have wanted it, this was 1,000 times better.
Yeah.
It was just totally different. When did you ever see anything like that before?
Yeah,
and they were just shining in that whole thing and the funny lines and she goes, why do you want to fight? He goes, because I can't sing and dance. Oh, like that kind of thing.
That's great.
You don't have much of a brain, so you got to use your body. Oh,
I love it. I love it.
I love all that, too. Every once in a while, I have to take the movie, the original, out and watch it.
I encourage you, and I hope that you do, and we go through each movie, and there's just so much to talk about. But in our format, we talk about the movie, but it's my brother and I, so as brothers we'll do, we'll go on tangents, and that's kind of our format. It's a casual, chill chat about Rocky, but then we talk trivia, talk goofs, talk flubs, talk about behind-the-scenes stuff, and then we go back to where we are in the movie. So that's kind of our format, and we can do maybe a part two if you can work with a guy and see when and we would love to obviously work around your schedule, and I'd love to hear some boxing stories, behind the scenes stuff, and
absolutely. Like I said, he's very he's a very personable guy. He's articulate. You'll enjoy speaking with him. And he's like a wealth of information for boxing. He's a very nice person. He's a very personable guy.
Awesome.
I think you'd like speaking with him. I'll run it by him because
the funny thing
was he had just texted me today to see how things we're doing, and we're going to plan to probably try to talk in the week.
Oh, that'd be awesome. So, thanks so much, Ben. That'd be... And you've been very
kind
with your
time. I'll definitely run it by him. He'll definitely enjoy it. He would love something like this.
And how old is he now, if you don't mind asking?
He's about maybe 59 or 60. Like, I'm 56.
Okay.
I know he was about at least 2 or 3 years older than me, maybe like 59, like that.
So he was quite young when he did that boxing. He must have been like 20.
Oh yeah, he was in his 20s and everything. And he looks terrific.
Sure.
He stays in shape and everything.
I'm sure I probably wouldn't want to take any shots at him.
One time we had had lunch together, and as we were going, gave a bit of a hug and everything. So I was going, oh, the referee's going to separate us now in a clinch, you know, kidding around. And he was laughing. I said, I would hate to be in the ring with him. I'd be on the floor. Like the upper
oh, yeah. I think once a fighter, always a fighter. I guarantee you his punch would still sting you.
Without a doubt. You know, without a doubt. I'm sure, like I said, he's still in good shape and he's a very tough individual. So I'm sure he still has it in him. But one of the nicest people you'd want to meet.
I believe it.
Definitely pass it on to Guy.
Absolutely.
And when you give me the details of these things, you know, we'll do our best to get it out there as well for you and try to pick up some listeners.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, once this podcast is available to the one the interview that you're on. Ben, thank you so much. You've been a pleasure. You're a good man, and any Rocky fans,
thank you.
Is a friend of mine.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I love it all. So I'm very, very happy to speak with you. Whatever else I can do, you just let me know.
Right, sounds good, Ben. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, sounds good. Enjoy the rest of the day. Take care.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
So, Ruben, there you go. I'm not quite the seasoned interviewer that you are. And to Ben, I apologize for that.
No, you know what? Do you want input on your interview?
A live critique?
Yeah, come on. Why not? Why not?
All right, here we go.
You did fine.
Oh, thanks.
You did fine.
Well, my approach, Ruben, and audience, and Ben, when I first called them, this was the first time I've ever contacted anybody cold, so to speak. I mean, of course, Ben gave me his phone number. I tracked him down. Ben gave me his phone number, and I told him in Facebook chat that this was just going to be a feelers? Get your feelers out there?
Sure.
I wanted him to feel comfortable talking to me in that, to make sure that I'm not some nut, which is fair. Like, he seems like a reasonable guy, but for all he knows, I'm a nutcase. So I wanted to put him at ease, saying, hey, I would like to talk to you about Rocky and your screenplay, the third round, and all this stuff. But as the conversation was going, I already had my cell phone to record. That's what I mentioned in the interview, that it was already recording. One, because I was trying to test the software to see if it would work, but because the conversation was going so well, I was like, man, we should just make this the interview, Ben, since we're on the horn together. And he was really kind about that. So thank you, Ben. Just a great talker. I love that New York accent.
What I want to know is, do we have an accent? We must.
I always feel like we have a laxent.
A laxent? What is a laxent?
Did I just do a portmanteau?
Yeah, a portmanteau.
It's portmanteau. Ruben, I just created a portmanteau.
What's a laxent?
I just did it on the fly. A lack of an accent.
Lack of an accent.
Laxent.
Laxent. Well, I guess everybody had... I was on the ferry. We live on an island, so we got to go back and forth on the ferry should we want to go to, like, the North American continent.
Right.
We're beside this couple that were Russian. My daughter's listening to them and thinking, well, they have an accent. And then the man says to my daughter, you have the accent.
Right.
Perception. So perceptions. I guess one would feel that they have a laxent. But listening to Ben talk, it felt like a character out of a movie.
He did. And Ben, this with all due respect.
Oh, no, absolutely.
I love that.
It's a different part of the world.
Yeah, I love that accent, the New York accent.
We live on an island in Canada.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Nobody says, hey, you got a Victoria accent. Or you got a Victoria, BC accent.
Well, I guess, we're not. There's nobody in Victoria famous enough that they would identify that as an
accent. Steve Nash would be the only one.
Yeah, there's Steve Nash.
He's certainly a huge.
Nelly Furtado.
Nelly Furtado.
Pamela Anderson and I, and I guess you too, Mr. Wilson was her math teacher, and obviously I think he's your math teacher as well, and mine as well.
Yeah, Mr. Wilson, yeah.
Yes, we all have the same math teacher. I forget my learning assistance teacher, but we also have the same learning assistance teacher.
Well, it did wonders for her.
And for me. And for me. Like, you might not know this right now, because, you know, she's obviously dressed very scantily. She's made her career from that, and I try to follow in her footsteps. So right now, I took a page out of Burt Reynolds' book. I'm doing this interview on a bearskin rug.
Yeah, I like to attest to this. I found it very uncomfortable coming in with Ruben lying on the bearskin rug.
For those that don't know what we're talking about, just Google Burt Reynolds' bearskin rug.
No episode would be complete without a Burt Reynolds' bearskin rug drop.
Oh.
Bert, we love you. Hey, Bert, if you're listening, you still have that bearskin rug? What I love about that picture is where does the rug start and Bert begin?
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. Yeah, so anyways, Ben's accent, the way he told the story,
yes.
I felt very engaging. I liked how he was able to identify the story in somebody else. Yes. And then he just did what you did, which is...
I was just going to say, you know, Ben, he did exactly what I did. He had a project that he had in mind. He wanted to know, hey, what happened to this boxer that I loved as a younger person in the 70s? What happened to him? Well, I'm just going to Google him on Facebook. And lo and behold, there he was. And they just started talking. And he said the same thing. He thought he wanted to make sure the guy didn't think he was some Looney Tune.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of funny that I had the same feeling when I contacted Ben. So this is how, I guess it's how the world connects now. It's like, hey, hi. Would you mind talking? And some people say yes, and some people say no.
Well, just as you came in here tonight, Ryan, I got a, for my other podcast, the Always Hungry podcast.
Oh, you have another podcast with him.
I do. Have I ever dropped it?
I don't know.
Mentioned that I have another podcast?
Do you have another podcast? What's it?
Yeah, it's called the Always Hungry podcast. The
Always Hungry
podcast. Yeah. One of my favorite authors. I emailed him, and I took great painstaking to write an email because he has a flair for humor. And so I tried to do my flair for humor. Long and behold, he wrote back and said yes.
So reach out there. You never know who's going
to
say yes.
Well, we've had people reach out to us to be a part of the podcast.
And so we do have some listeners who have reached out to Ruben and I. And thank you so much for your enthusiastic support on our Facebook page. And may we remind our listeners to go to our Facebook page, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter for all your updates. And also on iTunes, give us a 5-star rating and a review because it really helps boost our podcast and the iTunes feel for other listeners to engage and to listen. Because there's so many Rocky fans out there. So number one, thank you to all our fans that are already listening. And number two, there's more of you out there, but they just don't know where we are. Your help helps us out. Fans have reached out to us and they want to be a part of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And we're totally open for that because people, much like our previous guest host, Kyle, who will be back, we've had some positive feedback on him.
Yeah, his mother really liked it.
Yeah, Gail, you are Kyle's probably number one fan, but we're probably number two. We're probably number two.
I'm definitely a number two.
You're number two? What is number three?
I think it's like everything combined.
Speaking of mom, sorry, mom. So reaching out to each other is what we're all about. And, there, I have to sound like Canadian there. Boot. For Ben's interview, back to the interview, I really liked his reaching out to Guy. I really hope, cross my fingers, I'm not trying to push Ben into doing this, but I really hope we get to talk to Guy as well, because the plethora of stories this guy has. He worked with the mob, boxing in the mob. I mean, that story alone.
Well, it has hand in hand.
Yeah. So this screenplay, I'm excited by. It's called The Third Round. I say again, it's called The Third Round. You can find it on Facebook. We'll provide the link on our Facebook for that and on Twitter. Ben and his wife, Marcy, can also be found on Twitter and Facebook, and we'll provide their links as well. Since the interview that I had with Ben, he mentioned the show The Mama Luke that he is doing, and it's been picked up by Roku and Amazon Fire.
Go Indie TV.
And through GoIndieTV.com. So GoIndie TV picked up the show. So congratulations, Ben, on that.
Yeah. He's obviously a real talent.
A real talent, and I love how he did his whole career in the police force, served in the police force and obviously put his life on the line serving the public. You're never too old. This doesn't mean Ben's old, but you're never too far in your life. That's a better way of saying it. Even after you've done a full career to keep doing something, chase your dreams and chase your goals. So good job, Ben. Back to the screenplay though. When I listened to the interview again, cause when I did the interview, I'm kind of nervous, like the conversation/interview.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm nervous a little bit. So I found myself, what should I say next? What's the next question I should ask to make this interview interesting for listeners?
Yeah.
It was nice for me to go back and listen to it again and just to listen to Ben. And also, I really want to see this movie. This movie. And it's so frustrating that I can look at any weekly release of movies and say, why did this one get made?
It is frustrating.
And there's movies that are artsy-fartsy, let's say, and mm-hmm. they're supposed to be good that just aren't, and they bomb all the time.
To me, so
why not risk this movie?
I agree.
It's got the mafia undertone. He was raised by a mob like dad or tough, that tough dad type syndrome. Mm-hmm. He wants to get out of the shadow of his father, prove himself in the ring. He was supposed to lose this fight.
This goes back to our previous conversation that if you were like an eccentric billionaire, just go and make these movies.
I know. If I had, and this would have cost a lot. I would suspect an independent project like this much like the first Rocky film, this I think if this film could probably be made, I don't know, Ben, you could correct me if I'm wrong, I bet you $1 million, maybe $2 million, could get this thing off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
A small independent film, no CGI required, no...
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I was actually going to go to the movie. I try to go to the movies every week, and I was going to go to the movies on Tuesday, because that's cheap night over here. There was nothing for me to see.
Yeah.
There's like, I just wasn't in the mood. But like the big ones are all like just CGI.
Sure.
If, I don't know.
There's nothing wrong with CGI when it tells the story, helps tell a story. But when it's like, I understand, again, we talked about in the interview, the superhero movies, which I do enjoy, and you couldn't almost tell them nowadays without CGI. You just can't tell that story.
It's just when it leans too heavily on sure. it. It's kind of like a good song can sound, like a good rock song can sound great. The distortion of the guitar and all that, and also sounds great acoustic. Transfer. So you, sometimes you need that CGI can help tell the story, and sometimes like a movie like Rocky, you don't need any CGI. The story gets told.
Yeah, absolutely. Boxing movies, I think they'll always have an audience because, again, like we talked about in the interview, Rocky isn't a boxing movie.
No, it's not.
And I don't think The Third Round is a boxing movie. It's a drama. It's family. It's got heart. It's got drama. It's got the mafia tie, which I love. I love mafia type movies. I love anything mafia related. The mob, that type of stuff. It's just very intriguing. I find that whole world fascinating. And this is a real life dude. And he's still around. Guy, talk to us. And by the way, Guy, if you were in Canada, your name would be Guy.
Hey, what's up, Guys?
Guy. Yeah. So, all in all, a great interview. So I can't thank you enough, Ben. And the Mamalouk. Again, which I believe just got picked up for Go Indie TV, so that's great. And again, Ben, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Ben.
To talking to me and giving me a chance and a voice. And this is the first interview of three that we have. So listeners, be prepared. This week, the following week, and the week after, we have three interviews. But can we hint at the big event that's coming up?
Yeah, sure.
Between now and the 3 weeks, because we're going to have to film this thing before the 3 weeks is over, but Ruben and I are going to do a live podcast. That's right, folks. You heard us. A live podcast. You're going to see how the sausage is made, how the fudge is packed, how the corn is creamed.
How the corn's creamed?
Oh, there's got to be some.
Oh, there's got to be more.
How the pepper is sprayed. How the chicken is filleted.
Wow, you're on a roll. How the butter is spread.
There you go.
How the eggs cracked.
How the doughs are nuts. Okay. Enough. So you're going to see how stuff is done. So Ruben and I, we're gonna work on the details. We'll stand by for that. But you're going to basically, the idea is you're going to see us talk live. You're going to see the awkward long pauses. You're going to hear the jokes that don't go well. You're going to hear all the stuff that happens before we edit and make ourselves look and sound pretty. Well, actually, yeah, you're going to see us live. So you're going to see that we don't look pretty, that not only do we not have a face for TV, we don't have a face for radio.
No.
We have faces for podcasts.
Yeah, faces for podcasts.
So stand by for that, guys. We're looking forward to that. And yeah.
Ding, ding.